Everyone, happy Sunday. We are streaming exclusive in our private Facebook group. Brad Hughes and I are here. We're so excited. We know that sometimes we have guests on the show. Guys, today it's just us. It's just us having fun. We have so many things to update you on. It is the Teach Better birthday today. So we get to celebrate the Teach Better team turning 9 years old. So that's one of the many things we'll get to chat about. And then, of course, we're getting into listener questions. So as you get started with joining our Sunday weekly warm-up, please feel free to drop in the comments where you're listening from, how you would celebrate the Teach Better birthday, and let's get into it. Good evening. Brad, I knew I'd do that. I knew it would
happen. You know, we have an international audience, Ray, and I'm sure that someone is tuning in where it is morning. So, hey, if you're joining us and it's morning where you are, maybe you're in Europe or maybe you're in Asia.
Something.
Africa. Yeah. Let us know where you're at and what time of the morning it is and why the heck are you up watching us on when you should be sleeping? Maybe you're waking up with us.
Yeah, like good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to those more or less in the U.S. We're excited to see you. My name's Ray Hewart, even though I don't know what time it is, and Brad Hughes is in the house.
I am in the house, and I'm delighted to be back with my co-host with the most on the Lake Michigan coast. It's Ray Hewart, and Ray and I have been recently both in California, the great state of California, lovely, beautiful California. Unfortunately, our paths did not cross. I was there for vacation. Ray was there on Teach Better Business. But we're going to compare notes on California tonight. We're going to welcome you in. So wherever you are, just let us know who you are, where you're joining us from. And please make sure you grant StreamYard permission to show your name because we want to be able to put our guests to the names.
And we will be doing a listener question later. But to be honest, friends, you know that we use this space to get your thoughts. And Brad and I have some questions about our office space. If you wouldn't mind just like randomly choosing to have an opinion on our lives, we'd really appreciate it. So if you consider yourself relatively opinionated, this would be a good place to begin, I think.
I think it'd be great. I mean, we, as you know, as our Teach Better family knows, Ray and I have extensive production assistant staff behind the scenes. And we also employ a cast of thousands, including graphic designers, as well as interior designers to make our studio spaces look, sound, and just appear the best for you. But sadly, we're still in need of some input from our Teach Better Nation. So get ready to chime in. Let us know how you would improve our studio setups here.
Yeah, Brad, it's funny. When we started going live together weekly, which was like 2 years ago on Fridays, we would always joke like that we had a whole production team in front of the camera that like you guys couldn't see. And even though that's not true, we still, I mean, they're invisible characters in our minds that still very much help us out, refill our coffee. It's great. But Brad, you were talking about painting the wall that's behind you. And I just moved into my new office. Woo. And I like components of it. And I'm struggling with components of it. And I'd love people's thoughts. So Brad, first let's start with the color of your background because I want to hear people's thoughts in the comments. I see comments already flowing in, friends. If Brad was going to paint his background, what color should it be? What color?
Ray, when I first started going live with you, it was sort of your basic grayish, just a normal, you know, home interior paint to kind of grayish. You put stuff on a wall and it's grayish. I had what I thought was going to be a dark denim blue background, lots of contrast, but on camera, the dark denim blue actually appeared almost a blue black. It was almost black.
And it did
maybe
look
you
black,
remember
yeah.
Tuning into our weekly warm-up or to our daily drop-in, and I was on a so almost a black background. So I put the word out and kind of got the advice for this kind of Adobe kind of brick red or dark brown or deep brown. And I liked it, but it just... There's just something about it that I love change. I want to change it up. And I'm looking for your advice, Ray, and looking for advice from anyone tuning in. What color should I make my background?
Yeah, I want to hear some things in the comments. Brad, my initial thought is that you should honestly do like this blue, like a light, light blue.
Oh, nice.
I'm wearing like an aqua on the screen. We kind of have like an aqua that goes into green. For some reason, Brad, I'm feeling like a lighter blue for some reason could be nice. I'd change it up. You've always gone with dark colors. Maybe you go blue this time.
You know, it doesn't take long to get a can of paint at the local home improvement shop and roll it on. And if it works, great. I think the light blue, and when you point it up there to the top left of our Sunday weekly warm-up screen, and you're beautiful. Beautiful aqua long sleeve tee. Is that a mock neck you've got on tonight, Ray Hewitt?
I have to tell you, I have a bone to pick about my sweater. So how dare you bring this up, Brad? I was wearing a black sweater all morning. And then I realized that I have totally shot myself in the foot that now that I have a black background, I can't really wear black as easily on camera because I have dark hair and I'm worried I'm just going to look like a floating head.
And I'm not sure if you remember, but there were a couple episodes where I had a black sweater on with a black background. And I think it was our friend Brianne Fennell said, is that Brad Hughes's floating head there?
I cannot believe it didn't occur to me because I picked this office out. Guys, if I could tell you it was done strategically, you don't understand how strategic this new office is. Like, I thought of every nook and cranny. I had everything laid out. And then I sat down to start, I think it was a few days ago when I started this project and it was like up and built. And I'm like, oh my God, I never thought the effects of the black background, even though I love a black wall, that this could have. So I'm trying to make it work. Finally got some shelving up, have some, you know, knickknacks over there that I was going to ask you some questions on, but it's hard to do a black wall that you're live streaming unless you are, I think if I was a blonde female, I may have some enough contrast.
Tell me about what you're sitting on, because it looks comfortable, but also I love that it's not quite like it's a little bit on an angle. So it's kind of some dynamism happening here. It looks like you're just kind of digging in, ready for some great conversation.
Well, if you remember, I used to in my office have a lounge chair I sat in. Yep. And that's not really conducive for my office right now, although I still have the chair and I love it. So I bought a nice looking office chair that has this like nice brown color. Thank goodness it's not black too. And I'm like, okay, but it like leans. I feel a little like I could be that student in class that's bouncing around. I need to be careful. I have gone live in this chair before, like, you know, two offices ago, I had this chair and I really liked it. So no complaints except for there's no armrests. And I like to lean, so I'm going to swivel it a bit and get my armrest this way.
Tell me about some aspects that you really like. You mentioned that there are some things that you really like and some things you're not really crazy about yet. So what are you loving and what can we help tweak?
Yeah, you know, few things. The black cannot change. So I'm just in the mindset of acceptance these days. So that's just something to deal with. But I never know what to put on the shelves. I'd love to ask our community here, like, what would you put on shelving? I kind of have two different approaches. One is I could, you know, go on Pinterest and grab the right vases and the right books that are supposed to look perfect. And of course I won't get it right, but I could try. What I found though, is I ended up going through my things and finding really valuable objects and putting them on here to say, all right, maybe it looks aesthetically all right. But then if anyone ever brought something up behind me, there would be an enormous story, an enormous thing to talk about. And it allows me to, you know, use my office and look around and have things that really bring me joy. And I think a lot of us do that in our classrooms. But, you know, there's a lot of personal stuff that I put on these shelves that I think is maybe the right way to go. I'm not quite sure. I'm going to still keep playing with it.
Yeah, I agree. And if nothing else, if we want to change up the Sunday Spark portion of our show at some point, depending on what's on the bookshelf, we could switch up the Sunday Spark and we could have Ray's Story Hour. So Ray just reaches behind, picks off a book from the shelf and just involves us in sort of immersive and kind of calming and soothing bedtime stories just right for a Sunday night.
I would love it. Friends, if you can identify anything on this shelf that you want to know the story of, hold on, let me move it so you can see. I don't know that it's close enough. Maybe you'll have to describe an object or you may not know what it is, but take a peek at what you want the story of, and maybe that'll be something we'll be able to talk about, Brad. If you had to identify a physical item in your life that brings a lot of joy or meaning to you, what would it be?
Alana here joining us live mentions family photos. Family photos for me are fantastic in my office at school. It's just a way of anyone coming into that space to know me a little bit better, spark some really nice conversations and, you know, relationships and talking about the important and the very special people in our life. I'm also a huge fan of Walt Disney and anything to do with Disney and animation. I've got my Disney knickknacks behind me there, Ray. So anything that allows me and others to connect, whether it's over Star Wars or Disney or different artifacts, I've got a big Teach Better poster in my school office from the Teach Better conference, Teach Better 22, and just lots to spark conversation. What's coming up for you in terms of the things that really speak to you and speak about you?
Yeah, you know, I found these in an old book. I must have like stuck them in the book. But these are Polaroids that were taken on a trip with my family. It was me, my sister, brother-in-law, and parents. And I it was so fun looking through them, having not looked at them for a while. What we did, if any of you have a family vacation coming up, steal this. I bought a Polaroid camera on Amazon. They're a little more expensive than I'd like to admit, but totally worth it. And we did a scavenger hunt. And we had this whole list of things that the two groups needed to go find. I, of course, was with my sister and brother-in-law, completely goofing off. And there's just some like really fun photos we took on this like Polaroid excursion that was kind of fun to see some. So like lots of little cars we took pictures of, and my sister and I randomly pointing up to a tall structure. So a family photo-wise, that's the only ones I have here so far. Outside of that same trip, we made a photo album. Do you guys ever do this?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so this was a photo album. Oh, maybe this was a different trip, actually. Scotland and Italy? No, it was the same trip. Yeah. And we have a photo album. So this I also put up there because it was kind of nice being able to have that too. So little things here and there, but a few family photos. I agree with family photos.
I think anything that allows the viewer or anyone coming into that space to know you a little bit better and to see those connections. And this is really what our Sunday show is all about. It's making connections between ourselves, Ray, and between ourselves and our Teach Better family tuning in and any of our guests that are coming in, just getting to know each other better. That the more we know each other, the more connected we are, the more comfortable, the more willing I think we are to stay connected and to reach out.
Brad, do you remember, and I'm sorry, I'm going back in the day. Do you remember when you purchased something for, I want to say it was your mother, that she wrote a prompt every week for a year and that story was created? Would you speak to that project a bit for maybe our viewers here who didn't know about that project?
Yeah, absolutely. It was through a company called Storyworth. And so I bought a subscription and gifted it to my mom. And then it provided her with a prompt to do a little writing, a little reflecting, almost like a little online journal. And then over time, mom would complete the prompts. When enough prompts have been completed, then I asked Storyworth to gather all of the prompts together into a book. And so that book was published, and it's we've got a copy of it here in our home. And you've got a copy of a Storyworth book right there too, Ray, with your grandma.
Yeah, my grandma and I did the same thing. Well, my grandma and my mother did the same thing. And I found that book as well. And I have to admit, I have not read it, but look how thick this book is.
Right.
I mean, this is a big undertaking, not only to write it, but to read it. It's full of really wonderful stories and full of pictures of her and her friends.
That's right.
How cool is that? I love it. I'm looking here and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so cool to see her. You know, even this one, this is my grandfather's fraternity photo that she put in here. Like, holy moly, that 1958 is Alpha Epsilon Pi fraternity photo. It was such a cool project. And so when I found that book, I put it here too.
You know, the ability to capture, the thoughts and the remembrances of our loved ones, along with artifacts like photos or yearbook pictures or family pictures or documents, manuscripts, it is really kind of a genealogy project that's collaborative. I wonder if any of our viewers tonight are involved in family history, in gathering the story of your family, your families, and just a wonderful way to stay connected with loved ones near and far.
You know, Brad, I'm taking us more into an education realm, but I don't know the project as intimately. My mother did it with my grandmother, but having your experience here might be helpful. When you did it with your mother, is this anything that maybe teachers could take on in the spring doing for the next few weeks with their students? I mean, think about some of the prompts wouldn't be appropriate for your classroom, but some of them, like tell a memorable story or some of these, could be interesting writing prompts to either record on a podcast or have students actually write and put together a book over the next few weeks. I mean, I know it would be short. I know there's only about, you know, 8 weeks or however many weeks left, but it might foster a really fun culture building activity that in the end, they kind of walk away with a memory of that classroom.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And an idea comes up right away that I know many educators do, and that is have your class, have your students write a letter of welcome to students coming into the same class the following year, or, you know, things you need to know about Miss Hewitt, things you need to know about Mr. Hughes, or things I wish I knew before, anything like that. And so, I mean, you could provide that prompt, you know, write a letter of advice to someone coming into third grade or fifth grade or ninth grade, and then compile it. And then how cool would it be to have that book available to read aloud in your classroom when kids come in, or to display the art as part of your welcome back to school kind of approach? I think it's a great idea.
I think it'd be very cool. I would love to see what other educators are doing, especially Brian Fennell popping in. I love seeing Brian in the comments always. She's a wonderful member of our Teach Better team and also a member of our Teach Better family. She does so much where she loops with students. So I can only imagine the stories that would come out of those reflections and experiences and little notes that they would write to their future students.
Well, I know Bree is very proud of that opportunity to be a looping teacher. And also to, I think about the growth that you can celebrate over the 2 or 3 years of that cycle with that class. We also come back again and again, Ray, to relationships and the power of Bree as that teacher for those kids, that cohort for 2 or 3 years. It's just incredible.
So good. Friends, we have so much more in store for you for our Sunday weekly warm-up. One of the things that we want to do is answer your questions by taking listener questions. We have a few of our community members here who have submitted questions about mastery learning that we're going to dive into today, keeping it kind of light, but maybe some elements of food for thought. This would be a great time to tag a friend that might be in this group who always wanted to dive into mastery learning, or somebody that you follow in this group that's been really helpful throughout your journey, exploring new progressive ways to reach all of your learners. So we'll be right back. Thanks for sticking with us for our Sunday weekly warm-up. We are headed into our Sunday strategies, which is all about supporting you all. If you have any questions you want to bring to the table, this is a live show exclusive in our private Facebook group over at teachbettergroup.com. Add your questions. I know we do stream this later on Monday nights to all of the platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, and LinkedIn, but this is exclusive for you right now. So if there's anything you're thinking through or questions you have, not only for Brad and I, but for just the Teach Better community as a whole, please feel free to throw those in the comments and we'll do our best to answer those questions. Brad, we have some listener questions. Two of them seem to go very well together. So I think there's a few things we can look at, and I'd love for us to kind of go back and forth and talk through our thoughts on these questions and how we can support our community.
Sounds great. Let's dive in.
All right. The first question kind of goes into a very general idea. How does mastery learning help students learn concepts better than traditional teaching? Very general question. I think it's a great one to review.
I think so too. And I think it comes back to our understanding of really what leads to mastery. It's not the mastery itself that comes to mind for me. It's the steps, Ray, that lead to mastery. So when I think about the steps to mastering a concept or an area of the curriculum or particular skill, it's the way that the educator and the students together coordinate, or I guess orchestrate, the learning in ways that allow those concepts to come to life for kids in different ways, maybe in different modalities, and maybe at different speeds or different paces. What's coming to mind for you about the connection between mastery learning and success?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Anytime I hear an educator use the term traditional teaching, I always wonder what that means, right? What is traditional, and why did that type of teaching get labeled traditional teaching? For me, and for I'm sure many of us, I think of traditional teaching as lecture-based, meaning that you're up in the front of the room, you're speaking to a group of students, whether they be small or large, and then they're leaving your room being smarter than they were before you started speaking. And yeah. It's interesting because there are plenty of progressive models, including mastery learning, that can still have a lecture focus element of the classroom. Lecturing's not bad. I mean, Brad, I kind of feel like with how, you know, smart and awesome we are, we'd be great at lecturing, like sign me up. But you're right that it does add an element of, but then what? And it can't be only talking at students, but what else can we do? And that's where it comes into students being able to, you know, have some sort of opportunity to play with the content, whether it be practice problems or an activity that they're working through, a collaborative opportunity, and then the opportunity to get feedback on that and adjust. And I think the main negative about lecturing that I have found is that it really allows the teacher, or forces the teacher, to not have the time to do any of the other really good stuff. It's not that lecturing's bad, it's that it's bad on its own and you need all these other pieces. So when we think of mastery learning, we're looking at kind of freeing the teacher up to not just be the content delivery system, and allow the teacher to still share mass notes with their crew, but also be able to give that personalized feedback and that individual learning that we know our students need. We need them too in this community here. That's why when we're, you know, on Sunday Live, we're able to ask questions, and maybe somebody will put in a question, and Brad, then we get to talk about it and give that educator something specific to support them. And we want to create that type of atmosphere for our students. So I think it's always interesting when people ask that question.
You know, for me, the mastery also indicates that as educators and as a class community, we're going to persist until we understand and can demonstrate that we understand it, not just understand, but that we can, you know, synthesize it and put these ideas together to maybe even create some new ideas, some creative work as well. It also makes sure that the processes that we're using in our classrooms are created together with the students, and we've got students working with each other. So no longer are teachers simply content delivery, you know, that so-called sage on the stage, but, you know, kids are involved in setting their pace. Kids are involved in co-creating the learning, as well as using each other as resources towards mastery.
Well, it's so interesting you said that, Brad, because that's exactly where this follow-up question goes. And this follow-up question says, how does mastery learning address a concern of not being able to complete all the content within a specific time frame? And I love this question because this really allows us to ask, are we teaching the content, meaning that our expectation is that the students understand it and are able to continue with that understanding moving forward, mastering this content? Or is our job to simply expose the students to the information, whether or not they understood it? And that really is going to be the difference between making sure you cover all the content or making sure you taught the content to students.
You know, not all curriculum expectations are created equal or meant to be treated equally. Here in our province, we have overall expectations, the overarching or abiding ideas, the essentials, within the overall expectations, we have specific expectations as well. It's up to the educator to make sure that all students reach and demonstrate understanding of an application of those overall expectations. And within the overall expectations, we've got the specific expectations that can lead us in a little bit of a different direction. Is that the same approach that when you're meeting, say, a school in a different state, or are you helping them to unpack the state standards and to try to sift and sort between something like overall and specific expectations, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Brad. We've actually started labeling this training because we used to, I mean, we've always done it, right? We're celebrating the Teach Better's 9th birthday today. Yeah. There has never been a time where Teach Better's existed and we haven't tried to support educators in better understanding their power standards, which are the standards that have to be essential, that help us with grade levels that are coming in the student's future, and also other subject areas that are being exposed to throughout their learning day. But we've never really labeled it. It was kind of something that popped up that we're like, ooh, we'll do that training with staff and we'll make sure it's done. Now, for any of you interested, you can head over to the teachbetter.com professional development tab. I think it's like teachbetter.com/learning even will direct you there. And you can see our 360 model. The whole concept of standards is not only to understand what you have to teach, but also understand how important certain standards are. Because depending on where you're located, what you teach, or anything in between, there's an obscene amount of content that you have to cover.
For sure.
And in some regard, Brad, like you're noting, you have to decide if you're just exposing it, like covering it with students, or if you're really going to have the responsibility of allowing students to understand and master what's expected of them. And that's where we see power standards really being helpful. And that's where we see a lot of teachers move to a mastery realm, because even if they only cover 80% of the content, that means their students are leaving having mastered 80% of grade level content versus just saying, well, I exposed them to the information. Let's see what sticks. And maybe that's closer to 20% that actually sticks. And so that's like a fear, I think, that some educators are trying to overcome.
Ray, what would you say is, or where would you say are among the gold standards for students to demonstrate their mastery of a given concept? Would it be a teacher and student conferencing, or whether it be some kind of a product or presentation? Or, I mean, when you're doing your training with schools and districts, what kind of gold standards are we helping teachers to aspire to in terms of having kids demonstrate mastery?
You know, it's a great question. And the answer is the standard tells you, right? So when we look at our standards, we are going to compare it to Webb's depth of knowledge, which is a 4-tiered scale that really gives our students an expectation of how deeply they have to be able to learn it, right? Yeah. Is it just that they can look at it and point to it? Is it that the student has to be able to actually apply the information? Is it that the student needs to have such a deep understanding that they can compare and contrast between information related to that content? DOK really helps us do that. The best part is that the standard tells you what DOK it's going to fall under. If you're ever not sure, guys, AI is a great tool to use to do that. And it'll tell you, hey, the student needs to be able to apply this information. Check. Now I know exactly what I need to do. And you start with that background information, scaffold up, and then reach that application, and then move on with the content. So it's really beautiful that the standards have given us that clear expectation. And I think the struggle, Brad, right or wrong, is that like we as teachers are thrown new content all the time. We're thrown new resources. And I think the hardest part is just sifting through it. So my biggest suggestion these days is to use AI and use a brainstorm buddy. Make sure you know exactly how deeply the student needs to be able to understand something. And for many teachers, Brad, they like to go even beyond the standard. Like, oh, I don't want them to apply it. I want them to create something with this concept.
Yeah.
That's not wrong. Like, that's okay. If you have an activity that you love to do that's beyond what the standard expects of you, that's fine. Within reason. Because then if we're going beyond, it's not bad. But if it hurts us in exposing and teaching and allowing students to master other content, it might be something that we choose to put to the side. So big decisions here educators have.
The other thing that we recognize for all educators is that the plate continues to grow, not just in terms of curriculum mastery, but in terms of meeting the needs of our kids and families in growing and changing communities. You know, the SEL, the social emotional learning piece, is huge. And so, you know, working on ways to build connection, build community, build awareness of our kids' needs through the content continues to be key.
So good, Brad. Yeah, I'm excited that hopefully this gave our friends here something to chew on. You know, it's what are your beliefs? What do you think needs to be happening? And is it, are you making sure that you follow that expectation every time? Are you allowing yourself to do what is best for students, regardless of if you, you know, have other thoughts on the topic? I don't know. There's so many good things here, Brad. Anyway, should we transition to our Sunday Spark?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. We'll be right back, friends. We got a Sunday Spark for you. Woo. Hey everyone, we are back here on our Sunday weekly warm-up and headed into our Sunday Spark. As many of you know, this is my favorite part of the show where Brad Hughes shares something awesome going on in the world. Brad, you had a lot to choose from that you were sharing with me. Which one did you pick?
Rhea, tonight's story focuses on school bus operators making a difference. Recently, I saw a story, and we were joking before we went on air that there's so many ways to save stories. And when you go back and try to find them, where the heck are they? But school bus drivers making a difference. This story here comes to us from Distractify. And it's talking about a school bus driver in Arkansas who keeps a bucket of books on the bus to encourage kids to read. So on the photo, and I'll share the story on our Teach Better Facebook group. The photo shows the driver with her phone camera in the rearview mirror of the bus, with every kid holding up a book that they are reading to themselves on the ride home. Convincing kids to set down a personal device or to shut down the screen in favor of a book continues to be a challenge in many, many districts. And so the Arkansas Department of Education shared this bus driver solution to getting her kids to read, a post that's acquired over 4,000 shares and hundreds of comments. The school bus driver adds a bucket of books to the bus. So kids can pick up a few books to read on their journey. She's even set up a special guest reader program, Ray, with older students. The story that I read recently also had the bus driver inviting the kids to read the books aloud on the school bus microphone, the loudspeaker. So the story goes that a child wanted to use the speaker, use the microphone. The bus driver said, well, you can do that, but you have to read a book. Became so popular, Ray, that he purchased a wireless headset for kids to use that goes through the bus's loudspeaker system. So there is a reader of the day on this driver's bus. And guaranteed, when I find that story, that was the one that was the original Sunday Spark for me. When I find that story, I'll post them both back on our Facebook group.
So fun, friends. I love the creative, out-of-the-box solutions that we're seeing happening in our field. And this is definitely a moment to not only celebrate that bus driver, but celebrate new innovations happening in education on a consistent basis. If you are in a school or in a school district that has educators being innovative, we would love to celebrate them here on the show, either by bringing them in as a guest or just by featuring their classroom here as a Sunday Spark. So please feel free to tag them in the comments or direct message Brad and I with just a great educator that needs a shout out because they're bringing innovation to the field. I love this stuff. So fun, Brad. That was such a good Sunday Spark.
Thanks. And one thing I know that we believe as Teach Better family members is that the more loving adults we can surround kids with and involve in their lives, the better. I'm really fortunate to be in a school and a district with incredible bus operators who, you know, go above and beyond to make sure that they're getting kids to and from school safely, certainly, but building connections and relationships with the kids. You know, often the first kid, sort of the first adult they see in the morning on their way to school, often the last adult they say goodbye to before going home. And our school bus operators and any of our professionals who work with kids are needed and valued. So kudos to everyone who's making a difference in kids' lives.
So fun. Friends, we hope you have an amazing week ahead. If you are just wrapping up your spring break or entering into your spring break, or who knows whenever that time period was able to happen for you. We are here to celebrate you always. Please let us know if you need anything here in our Teach Better family. And if not now, we will see you next week, not only with our Teach Better Today morning show, but also on our Sunday weekly warm-up. We have a great guest on next week. And Brad Hughes, you are taking the mic and making it all happen. I cannot wait to see it.
I'm looking forward to it, Ray, and I wish everyone a wonderful weekend ahead. As you mentioned, don't forget to tune in to our Teach Better Daily Morning Show, Teach Better Today, each and every day, 7 a.m. Eastern Time. And we wish you a wonderful week ahead. Please stay in touch with us, and we'll look forward to reconnecting in a week's time here on The Warm Up.
We'll see you soon, friends. Have a good night.
Bye.